This week on Vaticano, join us in Rome in celebrating the 7th World Day of the Poor. Learn about the latest developments in the Vatican's so-called trial of the century. Sit down with a cloistered nun for an interesting conversation on faith, healing, and helping the poor. And we continue our series on the Vatican Museums. Vaticano starts now.
When we think of the immense numbers of the poor in our midst, the message of today's gospel is clear. Let us not bury the wealth of the Lord. Let us spread the wealth of charity, share our bread, and multiply love. Poverty is a scandal.
Pope Francis presided over Mass in St. Peter's Basilica on the 7th edition of the World Day of the Poor. The World Day of the Poor is celebrated annually on the 33rd Sunday of Ordinary Time and is an invitation to all the faithful to look to those in need with love, respect, and generosity. Do not turn your face away from anyone who is poor was the theme for this year's World Day of the Poor. The World Day of the Poor was initiated in 2017 by Pope Francis and has been celebrated annually on the 3rd Sunday in November ever since. The day began with Holy Mass in St. Peter's Basilica, presided over by Pope Francis. Then in the Paul VI Hall, the Holy Father was joined for lunch by a group of poor people and refugees, organized by the Dicastery for the Service of Charity. Sunday, November the 19th, marked the 7th edition of the World Day of the Poor. The initiative was started by Pope Francis to urge the Church to go outside its walls and encounter poverty in all its shapes and forms, all over the world today. During the week leading up to the World Day of the Poor, the Madre di Misericordia Clinic, a facility located next to St. Peter's Square, offered special medical care to the poorest, as explained by the hospital's manager, Dr. Massimo Ralli.
This is the clinic of the Department of Charity Service that offers year-round, daily, free care to the poor and needy. This week, though, the hours will be a little longer, so instead of just being open in the morning, the clinic will also be open in the afternoon to offer as much free care to as many poor as possible.
The team in charge of this health care consists of a group of 50 doctors and nurses, who are all volunteers.
In the morning after a briefing, the nurses, doctors, and practitioners go to the various rooms, and each room is dedicated to a specialty. There is the cardiology part, the gynecology part, and the general medicine part. So then everyone, depending on the needs of the patient, does their own work within the clinic.
In the lead-up to the World Day of the Poor, they saw twice as many people as usual, about 130 patients a day. Once the patient receives a diagnosis, a treatment plan is drawn up so that they can be cared for in the weeks and months ahead.
When we see the need for a specialist visit, the patient is referred directly to the specialist doctor. Then, however, we ask the patient to return to the general practitioner who first took care of them, so we can then take stock of his or her medical history a bit and possibly refer them for treatment or at least chronic therapy in order to arrange subsequent follow-up visits.
On Sunday morning, the Holy Father presided over Mass with the poor in the Vatican Basilica, followed by a special lunch in the Paul VI Hall.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vatican Updates, the most important news from Pope Francis and the Vatican. The Vatican announced that it was partnering with the auto manufacturer Volkswagen as part of its broader initiative, Ecological Conversation 2030, to introduce an all-electric, zero-impact car fleet in the Vatican by 2030 and to achieve carbon neutrality by 2050. The Vatican's efforts are not limited to overhauling its fleet, but will also include the construction of its own network of charging stations for electric vehicles, both in the Vatican City-State as well as in the extraterritorial areas. The presence of Jesus in every tabernacle points us to how we can serve our suffering brothers and sisters who share in Christ's passion today, Pope Francis told American priests. In an audience with the National Association of Hispanic Priests, Pope Francis shared his advice for living a Eucharistic prayer life ahead of the upcoming National Eucharistic Conference to be held in Indianapolis in July 2024. The Holy Father said, "Do not leave those who suffer alone. Do not leave the Lord of the Tabernacle alone." Pope Francis had an emotional meeting with an African migrant whose wife and 6-year-old daughter died while crossing a desert in Tunisia. 30-year-old Magembe Nimbilo Crepin shared his story during a meeting at the Pope's Vatican City residence, Casa Santa Marta. Crepin, who has come to be known in Italian media by his nickname Pato, is originally from Cameroon, but decided to leave his home country after his older sister was killed amid the violence of Cameroon's Anglophone crisis. The Vatican Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith, the DDF, released a document reaffirming that Catholics are forbidden from becoming Freemasons. The new document, signed by Pope Francis and DDF Prefect Cardinal Victor Fernandez, calls for a, quote, coordinated strategy involving all the bishops in the Catholic Bishops' Conference of the Philippines to promote catechesis in all parishes regarding the reasons for the irreconcilability between the Catholic faith and Freemasonry. Pope Francis met with priests of Rome's 17th prefecture, which sits on the eastern edge of the metropolitan area, in the parish of Santa Maria Madre dell'Ospitalità, to discuss pressing pastoral needs and material challenges. During the 1.5-hour conversation, the Pope took time to meet the 40 priests gathered there and to discuss the main pastoral needs of the parish and the prefecture, including work, the sacraments, poverty, hospitality, assistance to socially weaker groups, and evangelization. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. I'm Matthew Santucci for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with more on Vaticano. The Vatican's trial of the century resumed in September after a month-long pause. Accused are Cardinal Angelo Becciu and 9 others of alleged embezzlement of Vatican funds. This past July, the Vatican City's promoter of justice, Alessandro Didi, asked judges to sentence Cardinal Becciu to more than 7 years in prison. This is a landmark case at the Vatican. The last time the church tried a cardinal for financial crimes was in the 1730s. Edward Penton is a journalist with EWTN's National Catholic Register and has been following the story closely.
Well, this is really the first time that there's been such a major trial regarding the Vatican finances, a trial in the Vatican with Vatican prosecutors. The key person in this trial, of course, is Cardinal Angelo Becciu, the former sostituto, the deputy secretary of state. He is the first cardinal to be tried by lay judges. Cardinals could be tried in the past, but they had to be tried by other cardinals, obviously on permission of the Pope. But this is the first time that lay prosecutors can bring a cardinal to trial.
According to the official charge sheet, the cardinal is accused of embezzlement and abuse of office, conspiracy, as well as witness tampering. He's one of 10 people, including prelates, financiers, and high-ranking Vatican officials that are part of an investigation over the purchase of a luxury building in London at 60 Sloane Avenue. While the focus of the trial centers on the London deal, the charges and evidence span years preceding its conclusion. The investigation, triggered by the 2018 acquisition of the building by the Secretariat, has led to the current trial. Andrea Gagliarducci is Vatican analyst for EWTN News and has been watching the recent developments in the trial.
The next important hearing will be November 22nd, when the lawyers of Cardinal Becciu will speak. And so these are the two keys, in my view, Financial Intelligence Authority and Cardinal Becciu for two main reasons, because the Financial Intelligence Authority worked along the Secretariat of State in order also to fix the investments and to help the Holy See to recover money or to recover an investment that was good investment in my view, but was poorly managed. Mostly Cardinal Becciu is implied very much just in a small part of the trial, because for what concerns the London Real Estate, it just gave the initial okay, but then it was not sued anymore.
Cardinal Becciu insisted that he had nothing to do with the purchase of the London building, and it was managed by his successor, Archbishop Edgar Peña Parra. The acquisition of the London property, causing a loss of over 100 million euros for the Vatican, was a component of a settlement as the Secretariat disentangled itself from financier Raffaele Mincione. The Secretariat had previously invested around 200 million euros with Mincione in 2014. Cardinal Becciu approved the initial investment, its financing, and the unconventional recording on Vatican balance sheets, all forming part of the prosecution's case. Before the trial, Becciu resisted scrutiny when the Secretariat for the Economy and the Office of the Auditor General sought to audit the Secretariat of State's books for a Curia-wide audit in 2015 and 16. Reports, later confirmed by Cardinal George Pell and Auditor General Libero Milone, reveal that under Becciu's leadership, the Secretariat employed forbidden accounting practices to conceal the entire 200 million euro investment with Mincione and the associated bank loans from auditors. Looking ahead, it's not clear what the outcome will be because of the nature of the Vatican Tribunal.
The Vatican City State has a strange system where the Pope is at the top of everything. So at one point, the Pope could also ask to have an indictment or a guilty plea, even if there are no evidences, because the Pope wants to give an example. It will tell a lot about how the Pope is governing the Church and how the Pope is considering himself. No Pope so far in this last century intervened so much in the micromanagement like Pope Francis did.
With the trial set to continue this winter, with the verdict in mid-December, Becciu's lawyers will hope to answer the evidence in a systematic and convincing way. While they may yet produce arguments to sway the judges, they will have to do better than the Cardinal's own blanket assertions of innocence. As the trial progresses, concluding with a verdict expected in mid-December, Becciu's legal team aims to address the presented evidence. Mother Elena Francesca Beccaria is the abbess of the Monastery of St. Clare in Rome. EWTN Vatican sat down with her for a conversation on serving the poor, the importance of silence in the modern world, and helping people to find Christ.
What is the meaning of the dilemma of turning away from the poor, considering that there is also a poverty that is not only material?
Sicuramente, come dicevo, c'è una porta materiale anche spirituale e morale.
Certainly, as I was saying, there is a material, spiritual, and moral aspect to keeping the monastery door open, in the sense of welcoming those in need of a listening ear. We see that it is difficult to find someone who listens today, and if someone does, they often charge for it. Therefore, we prefer to invest this listening with the mark of gratuitousness. However, I also want to emphasize that it is very important for us not to avert our gaze from the sister next to us who is also in poverty. Our cloistered life involves very close relationships, always the same, without the possibility of escape, because we are here 365 days a year, 24 hours a day together. And among us too, there is poverty. Poverty of character, moments of hardship that the sisters experience. At the moment, there are 26 of us, ranging in age from 29 to 97 years, each with her own challenges and life experiences. It is crucial to listen to each other, to mutually welcome and support one another. It would be trivial to welcome those who live outside and then turn away from the sister beside me, who needs me in many ways. That's it.
What advice would you give to people listening from home to improve our interpersonal relationships?
Io parlo da contemplativa, quindi dico prima di tutto.
I speak as a contemplative, so I say first of all, by listening to the Lord, dedicating time to listening to Him in prayer. We have a lot of communal prayer, but also many times a personal prayer that should never be neglected, because they are important. The prayer that the church gives us to celebrate is important, but so is personal dialogue. And there in personal dialogue with Him, you also learn to see your brother and to know how to listen to your brother. Silence is necessary. The silence you learn in prayer, which then allows you to remain silent in front of your brother without rushing to judgments and quick answers that are often not the right ones.
Sono forse quelle giuste molto spesso.
Sorellina, noi viviamo in un mondo dove.
Sister, we live in a world where it's challenging to find silence. From your perspective, even from the contemplative world, what advice can you give to people to take better care of this silence that helps them be in relationship with God and others?
Yes, I see that it's difficult. I notice that those who come to pray with us often find it challenging. They say it's like hard work. It took them 2 or 3 days to learn to be silent. So I imagine that silence is demanding because it confronts you with yourself. As I mentioned earlier, we are not always capable of listening to ourselves. We prefer not to listen and not to see what is inside of us. The advice I give is to take it slowly. That is, don't give up trying. Perhaps with short periods, without expecting too much progress initially, because it can be discouraging, it can even be tiring. But a few extra minutes each day, and then you learn to spend even an hour in silence before Him. Many lay people who come to pray do it with us. We have an hour of adoration in the evening after the rosary, vespers, 1 hour of adoration, and then there are people who experience it with us in the church.
Sister, you spoke about people who may have considered taking their own lives or have lost a sense of purpose. Could you offer a word of comfort to these individuals?
But the only hope is Jesus. I speak also from personal experience. The Lord gave meaning to my life. He allows you to glimpse a different possible horizon. It's the word of the gospel and the person of Jesus entering your life. Otherwise, it's very difficult because everything human disappoints, ends, has a limit, and gradually in life, you experience that relying on the goods of this world carries the risk of losing them. The only one who truly remains always is the Lord and what comes from Him. In other words, faith gives you a different perspective on life, and life is filled with hope because it gains a different depth, relying on values that do not fade away.
We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano. The 40th anniversary of the Patrons of the Arts of the Vatican Museums is a milestone for the life of the organization and gives cause for celebration for the journey that members have shared together.
We really didn't know anything about museums. We didn't know anything about art, but we were asked to be part of this, and you know, when you get asked something, it's kind of hard to say no to the Vatican Museum.
Well, the opportunity was amazing.
People become patrons of our chapter for various reasons. Top reason, a chapter trip. And certainly this 40th anniversary has been an example of that. I have many new patrons. And I encourage that because I think there's nothing like coming here to understand, to see firsthand the works of your incredible contribution.
The institution of the church has existed for centuries, and for centuries, we have collected art. And so it's this repository of art and artifacts that tells the story of our Catholic faith, but also the story of humanity.
This evening, we really conceived it with Father Oga and all the staff of the patron's office here, just to put you together with the curators, with the head of laboratories, with the assistants, and with all the major restorers that have been working these 40 years.
The idea of having and sharing a common mission is really the key of our relationship. The patrons, since 40 years, understood our special needs. The restoration of those masterpieces, one of each of these tapestries that are surrounding us in this hall, is taking 10 restorers and 5 or 6 to 7 years to do it.
This tapestry is one of those examples. It's under the care of lay women and sisters of the Franciscan Missionaries of Mary, an order that was asked to do tapestry restorations by Pope Pius XI in 1926. Team members here are clipping threads that have been creating problems and straining the integrity of the whole piece. Some of them have moved to the next stage of repairs. They began just 6 weeks ago and should finish operating on the project by the year 2030. Their work is not without uncertainty, though, as the project has yet to receive funds.
I would like to tell you about the changes and plans we have in the medium and long-term time that testify the different activities in which we are involved and which you are involved. Canova, that we just inaugurated.
The Antonio Canova exhibition, which opened this fall with a press event, is a project that received approval, but needs renewed financial support.
This exhibition was possible thanks to the patrons of the arts in the Vatican Museum, specifically the Northwest chapter, and they immediately understood the importance of this project, not only for the figure of Canova as a sculpture, but for the figure of Canova for the museum itself.
Antonio Canova played a vital role in reclaiming lost art and developing new galleries for the Vatican Museums. The connection between Canova and the patrons of the arts is most vivid in this section, the Braccia Nuova.
Braccia Nuova was conceived after the defeat of Napoleon. Antonio Canova, at that time, was director of the Vatican Museums. He conceived this space to reestablish not only the authority of the Pope after the Napoleon time, but also the primacy of the antique. Everything surrounding us speaks of the antique. We have 28 niches with great sculpture, and you can see the beauty because, of course, we did restore the entire space. Each sculpture, even the one that seems to be in an incredible condition, they have centuries of life. If you see them in a deeper detail, each one needs to be cared more carefully. And it's exactly what we are expecting to do in the near future for them.
Next week on Vaticano, we continue with the third of 5 installments on the patrons of the arts of the Vatican Museums, as we show you in closer detail the work carried out in the restoration laboratories.